Welcome back to the Stories from the Ashes podcast, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm Amber, and I'm here with Charlessa and Stephen J. Carroll, an author of a couple book series that we are super excited to introduce you all to. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is great.
Yeah, we're super excited to introduce your books to everyone. But before we do that, let's get to know you a little bit. Could you share with us three of your favorite books, either from your childhood or that you find have really influenced you or helped to form who you are today?
Okay. The first one that I would say would be The Chronicles of Narnia, mm-hmm. specifically the Voyage to the Dawn Treader. I really liked the idea of sailing to the end of the world.
Yeah.
So, and I like sailing just in the real life. That would be one. Also, Gulliver's Travels. I thought it's very imaginative. He'd go to all these different worlds and see all these different creatures and talk to horses and little people and big people. So I thought that was a good one. And then the Bible is the third one. And I think specifically the King James Bible, because mm-hmm. that's the one that I read. I don't think people really understand like how being able to read difficult sentences helps mm-hmm. your mind. In a non-spiritual sense, I think just in an academic sense, the King James Bible has helped me in that way, and all the other ways it's helped, but yeah. that's a different point.
I was homeschooled growing up, and the curriculums that we used only used King James. So I definitely, the majority of my first memorization from my childhood is in King James. So when I quote things to my kids, they're like, what are you talking about? What does that even mean? And I'm like, I failed you. You need to at least be able to read it from an academic sense, like you said, like they need to have the ability to comprehend what's going on there. But yeah, well, that's
great. And it's all old things too. Like if you can't read that, you can't read the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. You can't read anything that's old, you know. So right. You have to be able to understand, you know, a paragraph long sentences.
Yes.
And to be able to like understand cursive. Antiquity. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I loved all the antiquity that my daughter and son and I read when we read your Histories of Earth series. So let's just jump right into that. So first of all, Amazon typically never recommends good books to me when they're like, oh, you liked these books, so you might like these books. Constant fails. Mm-hmm. But one time, Amazon showed me this little Kindle book for the Histories of Earth. And it was book one in the window room. And I went and I looked at it, and I think it's the same price it is now. Like all four books for Kindle were like $5.99 for the set.
Yeah, and I haven't like, changed well, the I price. Can,
yeah, in I was years. Like, I can Fantastic gamble prices. With that. I'll try that. So I got it, and then I also don't read Kindle books, so I get those more as like placeholders to remind me that I want to come back and look at something. So I'd started reading it. I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this. So like I usually read like the first chapter on Kindle to see if I'm really invested before I pay money for Audible books mm-hmm. or hard copies. So I really enjoyed the first chapter. And so I got it on Audible. And I am not generally someone who is like, just skip the books and go straight to Audible. But I am for these. Your reader was mm-hmm. excellent. Yeah. It just made the whole experience something entirely different. I don't even have the words for how much I enjoy the reader, and especially because the way you have it written with the narrator talking to the person reading the book so often, it really felt like I was there watching like a stadium show happening, and then the announcer who's, you know, narrating the game will like turn to you and be like, oh, and you might not know this, but these are like the stats on this player. And so this is really useful information. You're like, oh yeah, I'm glad to know that. Then you can go back to watching it. And it was just so excellent. And I definitely felt a ton of Narnia influences in this and loved that. But I think it's a lot funnier than Narnia. Like there's so much humor in these. But in book one,
wow, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Like to say it's funnier than I mean, that's probably not what C.S. Lewis was going for, was funny.
Right, right.
But it's yeah. nice to have that advantage, at least, I guess.
Yeah. But these also don't feel like they were going for funny. It feels so mm-hmm. natural. Like sometimes humorous kids' books can feel really forced. But mm-hmm. with these, I was, you know, listening to them on audiobook with some of my kids and hearing the points where they would chuckle and then the points where only I would chuckle and I would realize, oh, this is a little bit more of a cerebral joke or something that they need more life experience for. I really enjoy those books that are just as funny for the adult as for the kid. It's like watching Wallace and Gromit, right? Everyone's mm-hmm. laughing at something different, but everyone walks away having enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a C.S. Lewis quote that, paraphrasing, like, any good children's book mm-hmm. must also be able to be enjoyed by adults. So you have to have, I mean, cause you, like, you're sharing it with your kids. And so if you didn't have the Audible book, you would be reading it to them.
Right.
And you don't want to be bored for
yeah.
20 hours as you go through the series and be like, this exactly. is the worst thing I've ever read, but I'm glad yeah. my kids like it. You don't mm-hmm. want that. So it has to be both a book that adults would like to.
Yeah. There's a couple series that are really well loved in our Facebook group that some of the parents don't enjoy as much, which I think is unfortunate because I enjoyed them. But
yeah.
I really think that this is a series where the parents won't be like, oh, I'm just reading these because my kids love them so much. But they'll be like, no, I really wanted to see what came next. So something that I liked about these that I just want to show the readers is how they increased in size. So mm-hmm. book one was about 2.5 hours. I wrote these down. Let me refer to my notes real quick. So it's about 2 hours and 45 minutes for audio for book one. Book two was 4.5 hours. Book three was 5 hours. And book four was 6.5 hours. So if you have a later reader, someone who started reading later due to dyslexia or any other delays, this would be a really good confidence building series where they start with book one and they are able to get through it quickly and just feel that sense of, I did it. And then each book gets a little longer as it goes. The other thing that I really loved about this series is how gentle the first three books are. Like, anything bad that happens off scene.
So, yeah.
And the narrator handles that really well. Like in book three, which is All the Worlds of Men. So I'll say the book title. So In the Window Room is book one. A Prince of Earth is book two. All the Worlds of Men is book three, and Worlds Unending is book four. So in All the Worlds of Men, there's someone who knows, is not a main character, is a side character, and because of the way things are on his world, he knows he's going to be put to death for this unfair crime that he has committed, and that if he doesn't return to his home, that they instead will put one of his family members to death, and so he is making the right choice, even though he could escape and he's going home. And the narrator, you know, talks to the reader and is like something to the effect of, dear reader, you know, these sad things happen and it's not necessary to dwell on them, but do know that this person did get put to death and that they did it with honor. And I thought that was beautiful because it makes it something where we're not shying away from the hard things, but we're also not being graphic when it doesn't need to be for children. And so I really appreciated that.
Have you ever seen that one movie, the Italian movie, Life is Beautiful?
Yes.
Yes. I mm-hmm. think it's like that. If maybe you're listening to the podcast, you haven't watched it. It's a movie about a father and a son in a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the father does everything he possibly can to make sure that the son doesn't understand that he's in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the idea that I had for that scene was, this is still a book for kids. Yeah. So you can talk about a hard thing, but you don't have to show it.
Right. I really appreciated that even as an adult, because I think that for kids, so much of life is we can't visualize things that we haven't experienced. And mm-hmm. so if they haven't experienced these hard things, they're not going to get the same mental picture that an adult would. And so we absolutely love the Green Ember series. And in one of the books, one of the female rabbits gets brutally attacked. And I sobbed through it, reading it aloud, because I have life experience with having been physically abused. And so I know what that feels like. And it was so graphic for me with my life experience. Whereas my kids are just like, get it together. Like, you know, so right. she gets knocked around a bit. Let's move on to the next chapter. And so they just don't have that frame of reference. But as a parent, I have found more and more that some of these series that I really love, that as parents, we just say, oh, it went over my kids' head. They weren't affected by it. It affects me. And I don't like being affected in that way when I'm trying to just have an enjoyable time with my kids. And so I really appreciated, I felt like you were safeguarding me as a parent as well from having to dwell on something that I didn't necessarily need to see. And so I really appreciated that. And then in book four, so these books start, I think it's really interesting how this goes. So the first book is two little girls at a boarding school. And this is your standard enemies to best friends story. But it also has the only anthropomorphized animal in the series. And can you tell me a little bit about that choice? He's like a giant oversized groundhog, but he reminded me a lot of Mr. Beaver. And it felt like this was a really good just introduction for everyone, an introduction not just for the girls to this experience of light travel between worlds, which is what the four books are built on, but also for us as the reader to understand what was going on. And we get to learn about all of it from this talking animal that happens to be in the house. But then I wanted to know more about him, and he was just like gone. I figured he died of old age after this book, but
he did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned that he was buried under a tree in the back of the house.
Okay.
Yeah, at the end of the book, I think there's a mention of it. So yeah, he died of old age because it puts you in a weird position because the storyline of the first book, if I want to give spoilers, I don't know, is the main character gets in trouble and she has to go stay in this house that's on the grounds of their school, but it's owned by the school, but nobody lives there because it's sort of abandoned. And inside the house, she finds this device that allows for travel to other worlds. And so a 11-year-old is not going to know how to use that. And no one knows that she has it. And it's unbelievable that someone could figure it out on their own, you know, especially as an 11-year-old with no science background to like try to put in the coordinates and travel through space. And so I put in Maris, the character who's this like alien groundhog gopher character who his family back on his world they'd all passed away. And he'd been traveling and going someplace else, and he came back and his family wasn't there anymore. So he just decided to live on Earth. And so he just lived in that house through, you know, you find out all this, the history of it as you go through the series, but he just lived in the house for years. And so that's the only way that you could have the story is to have this character, and no human is going to go live in the house indefinitely and just hide there. So it has to be some sort of a creature who couldn't blend in our world, and so he just stays there.
I really like that.
Yeah, but it was cute. I think it's the first book is definitely more of like a Hobbit kind of feel, and the next three books are sort of like the Lord of the Rings. Like you went through this more kiddie kind of a story, and then you get into more of the meat of the story. It's not to say that the next three books in the series aren't good for kids to read. It's just, they're just a little bit older.
Yeah. One thing that I liked about this first book is it could work as a standalone. Mm-hmm. Like it just kind of resolves at the end and we, you know, hear what these girls are going to go on to with their life. And Charlesse and I were talking earlier today about how some books really just need a Virgil character, like a guide, like in Dante. Or like Virgil just guides Dante through and gives him the information that he needs. And so I really feel that the Mr. Beaver type character in this book just brought that extra information and the guidance and was basically a tour guide to how to use all of this and what it is. And there was another series of books that Charlesse and I had read where we read the first few and then they like changed the whole cast And we were like, no, we don't like where this is going. And we're, we lost everybody we were invested to. So when we started book two, A Prince of Earth, and realized that the little girls from book one are now grandmas, I was like, no, I don't think this is going to be okay. I don't like, what is this? Every book we're going to have new people. I'm not down with that. But it was really good. So in book two, we move into one of the grandmas has stayed on another planet, and one of the grandmas is living in that house, and her grandson comes to visit, and it's been this family secret that no one in the family knows about. And so he comes, Timothy, and then he meets a little girl from the boarding school on the property, Barbara, and they get sucked into a whole bunch of adventures as well. And so this moves into one of my favorite things about the first three books is that there's no romance except for between elderly people. And I absolutely love affectionate elderly couples.
Yeah, you need, and I think you need to have that for kids' books.
Yeah.
To have that like clear separation between these are things that adults do, and we can see that, and it can be romantic in a way, but it's not for kids. And so I think there needs to be that clear separation. So that's why I didn't have any sort of like romance other than, you know how like when you're older and you see two kids and you're like, they'll probably end up together because they're like, they have just the right sort of temperaments and they'll like keep each other in check. It has that sort of an element, but it's not anything that the kids would really understand.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, there's more to a story than romance, especially when you're a kid, because you want to read a story about dragons and flying in space and knights and princesses and things and, you know, kissing and all that other things. It's not really on your mind, and so why put it there?
Yeah. I also just really appreciated how the women were strong characters, even from book one, when they're just little girls. Like you can see that fortitude and virtue that they have in themselves and valor. And then you get to see that develop into who they are as these older women who have raised their children or are still raising their children and have grandkids. And they are very much equals with their husbands and able to make wise decisions. And I thought that those relationships between the husbands and wives were just really good examples for anyone who's reading the book to be like, yeah, I want that. That's what a healthy marriage and dedication looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's times when in the books where the older grandma characters save their husbands or do something that their husbands couldn't do, whether like they weren't able to, they were in trouble, they needed help, or like legally they weren't allowed to do it, so their wife has to do it. In the case of Delaney, who's the queen, and her husband, who's the king, like there was a rule where the king wasn't able to use this light travel to travel around, but only the queen was, because the king had,
because the rule was that no one on the planet could use it.
Because
the queen was
no
from
one,
Earth, so she could.
That's right. It's this weird space rule to try to keep light travel away from the population that it would have caused trouble for. So, so it was, there were things that the women could do that the men couldn't do. And, you know, that's okay. Everyone has their time and their place for helping. And, and there's definitely times when men in the story, they're the heroes and they go and save the day. And so it's just a back and forth.
Yeah. And I really loved how the king who was living under that law, how he abided under it, even when it would have benefited him to use the globe to travel with this light travel, that he never felt he was above the law. So I thought that there were a lot of, because we get to go to different planets, I thought there were a lot of really good political lessons for my kids. Mm-hmm. I always joke that if you want to study politics with your kids when you're homeschooling, all you have to do is watch Clone Wars, the cartoon series, because every planet that they go to try to get, you get to like look at what their government was and see all the flaws and all the benefits and how it may have been superior to what they're now being forced to join. But I kind of felt that with this too, that as we get to go to different planets and see what their governments are and where they're lacking and where their strengths are. And it was just really, enjoyable to be able to talk through that with my kids.
Yeah. And there's, that's not something, when I wrote the first book, I didn't think that that was going to happen, but it's just a byproduct of you go to a different planet and you have different mm-hmm. culture and different, different laws. And it's a weird thing because of the light travel aspect of mm-hmm. it. I don't know how much I want to get into it, but basically like the different planets were settled by humans in mm-hmm. our Earth's past. So humans had gone to these planets and settled it. And then they had kept their culture and it developed separately from human culture on Earth. And so when the characters in the last book, they go to this planet where it was settled by Romans, they still have a Roman culture that mm-hmm. operates in the same sort of like Roman Senate, Republic sort of a concept. And so you kind of see how that would look. It's like you're going into the past and seeing how mm-hmm. this culture would react. And then it's fun. It's a fun yeah. way to think about it.
I thought that was very interesting. The Roman culture that still speaks Latin and mm-hmm. especially the aspect. So we are studying Plutarch in school. So right now we've done, you know, Julius Caesar and Marcus Brutus. And right now we're doing Pericles, I believe, and just realizing like this settlement in the book is from like that time period. Mm-hmm. And then in the book, the older gentleman who's there from Earth tells them about like the fall of Rome and just walks them through all of it. And then the coming of Christ and them moving from being this monotheistic place to Constantine putting them all mm-hmm. under a single God, and like just so, their response to it was hysterical, because it's probably accurate. Like anybody who had just been removed from that and is now being mm-hmm. told this is what happens would be like, that's preposterous.
right. So the older character Arthur is telling this to the Romans who had been living in isolation, and mm-hmm. like, and he's explaining to them the Colosseum games. And they're like,
mm-hmm. yes.
And they had never experienced that as Romans right. before the Colosseum games and before the emperors. And so yeah. they're like, no, we would never do that. We're above that. You're lying to us.
Right.
But if you don't see history play out in real time, yeah. mm-hmm. then you don't see what cultures could become, which yeah. I thought that was interesting that, he basically is put under the older character from Earth who's explaining what the Romans had done gets put mm-hmm. under house arrest and has to be like this. In my mind, it was sort of like, if you understand the idea of the Apostle Paul in mm-hmm. the end of Book of Romans, the Romans couldn't do anything with him because he was just going and spreading the gospel, and he was a Roman citizen, and so they didn't want to kill him. Eventually it did, but he was just put under house arrest. Mm-hmm. And in house arrest, he was preaching the gospel still by writing and doing stuff. So this older character in my mind was sort of like an Apostle Paul figure who mm-hmm. was put under house arrest for this extended period of time. And everyone would come to his room to hear more about what really happened with the Romans, like what mm-hmm. happened with Jesus, what happened with this, the progression of history on Earth. So I thought that was a fun way to do it too.
Yeah. I thought it was highly enjoyable.
So the fourth book you said was not as gentle. Did you like the fourth book?
I loved the fourth book. Okay. Absolutely loved it. I think that like the first book, I would be like, oh yeah, your 6-year-old could read book one and that would be totally fine. And then I feel kind of like how people are all willing to acknowledge that the Harry Potter books get more intense as Harry mm-hmm. ages up. I feel the same thing happened here. So we go from 11-year-olds to 16-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They're more in the thick of things. There's just a higher level of possibility for loss that's happening mm-hmm. in book four than there are in the others. So it has like brief touches on like suicidal ideation with Deborah's dad, and there's animal abuse that's referenced, and like really vivid wounds that we see just because mm-hmm. now we have a planet that heals things. So there has to be that stark difference of like someone is about to die mm-hmm. and now yeah. they don't. And then we do start getting into some light romantic attraction between yeah. the older teens that again is like incredibly well done since it's not the focal point of the story. So I really appreciate it. I didn't feel that anything was gratuitous. It just was there when it yeah. wasn't there in mm-hmm. the first three.
Yeah, I think it's a function of ending a series mm-hmm. where you have to culminate it and bring the stakes up. You kind of have to be building. Mm-hmm. And so you can still do it in a way that like a 13-year-old would read or a 14-year-old would read.
Right.
That in my mind, yeah. like the kids who read the first book would be a little bit older because mm-hmm. this is years from when yes. I wrote the first one. So if you had
yeah.
read the first one, then you'd be a little bit older and you could read this now and you'd be
exactly.
ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's some books that are just really great at scaffolding like that. And this is one of those series that did some excellent scaffolding. But I also loved just how much wisdom, like life wisdom, and then just really sage advice was just scattered all throughout the books. Like it's all over the place. And it felt very poetic. And then I found out you used to be a songwriter or are a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And that no longer seems surprising that it would sound so poetic. But just a couple quotes that I had here. Somebody was in a really bad situation and someone had noticed that and was hoping that person would be okay. And then it said, hoping alone will not come to the aid of a good friend. So he turned back. Like, yes. Like, those are just like good, solid thoughts. Like, you can't just, it reminds me of all the memes that are like hopes and wishes, right? And it's like, but how is that helping anyone? Like, you can't just hope. You have to also take action. And then someone that we came to love throughout the books is saying goodbye to people and says, I've lived a long life, if not in age, then in purpose. And I just thought that was like, that really resonated with me, that purpose can be so much bigger than like fulfilling our purpose can be so much bigger than just a long life mm-hmm. and the value of being focused and moving forward with what you know and have determined you need to do and how this person had done that and was able to end their life without any shame. So I just really liked that. But I felt again that the audiobooks added so much in feeling like the narrator is just like giving these asides of wisdom to you just left and right.
Yeah. Well, that's how the book was written. It was written as like a story that you would pass along to future generations. Mm-hmm. And so it just makes sense that it would be an audiobook as yeah. like an oral history where you're
right.
you're translating. These are the histories of Earth. This is what happened
yes.
when our people were on Earth. And this is how we got to these new planets.
Yeah. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed them. And I definitely don't understand why these are not more well-known. The only thing I can think of is marketing, because they are incredible stories. And
yeah,
I am excited to.
I don't know. When I first wrote them, I did a lot of as much marketing as I could without having a lot of money to spend on it. And I would send out all these different copies for free, read this book, and mm-hmm. And people would read it. And then you would either love it or you would hate it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it's just, I guess it's how a lot of things are, but like you would really love it, or it's just, no, I can't read that. That's terrible. So I don't know. It never became more than just a couple books, every month or so being sold. And yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I got a note from a grandmother, like a lot of years ago, who said that she read it to her kids and her grandkids, and they really loved it. And like you, obviously, Amber, you read it with your kids. And so I think it goes back to that idea of having a long life and purpose, mm-hmm. if not in years. Like,
yeah,
you know, you can you can write these books and maybe 100 people will be really affected by it, but that's 100 people. And then that's a good thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, Harry Potter level or something like that for it to have purpose. It can have, it can have a small amount of purpose in quantity, but a large amount of purpose in actuality. So
I definitely agree. So good. Well, I was really touched by them and I'm looking forward to reading them again with my next set of kids underneath the pair that I read it with. And we're going to tell all of our friends.
Have you read The Road to Jericho?
I have not yet done that.
Yeah.
I've just read The Histories of Earth.
Yeah. I think that's a good standalone. I put a disclaimer in the front because there is a little bit of gun violence and drinking. So it's specifically for kids who are a little bit older who can handle it. But it's not, it's tasteful, but it's like, it's just the story. And so it's like a little minor amount of it, but I just wanted to give that disclaimer for parents before they read it. But that's a good one too.
That's great. I look forward to reading it. So could you give us just a short synopsis of The Road to Jericho?
Yeah. So I wrote In the Window Room, the first book in the Histories of Earth. That was my first book. And then I wrote The Road to Jericho after that. So this is like my second book. And then I continued on in the Histories of Earth series after that. So this one is a standalone. It's set in like the 1940s Arkansas area. And so this boy, Ronnie Gentry, gets kidnapped by bank robbers. Like the bank robbers are coming out of the bank and they take him as a hostage and they pull him into the car so they can get away. And he sort of gets in with their group. The bank robbers sort of had a relationship with Ronnie's dad, who's since run away. And so it's a story of a boy finding his dad, but it's also a boy and a dog story because Ronnie was walking with his dog and then he gets pulled in and the dog chases after him. And so it's him and his dog and these bank robbers who go to this city, Jericho. And it's very allegorical. And there's a older character who's sort of this Moses figure who gives him some help and insight. It's very much like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where there's sort of this like ragtag group of criminals, and Ronnie has to figure out if he wants to be in that, if he wants to live in that sort of lifestyle, or if he wants to come back to his home and decide that having a good name is better than great riches. So he has to decide like, that's what I want. I want to be back home and be a respectable grown up. Right. So that's a good standalone story.
Yeah, that sounds good. How old is he?
He's,
because you said older.
Yeah, well,
older
he's like 10.
Okay.
But he's 10 in 1940. So he's 10 and can know the basics of like driving a car, the basics of like getting, like walking around by yourself for hours and not being afraid and shooting a gun and that kind of thing. Like he's really more like 15 in modern day. A 10-year-old in Arkansas in 1940 is pretty much an 18-year-old nowadays.
Yes. That's how I feel reading books like Bud, Not Buddy. It's like, man, this kid is young, but that's not what our kids that age would be running around doing, jumping train cars and things like that. That's fun. Well, that sounds great. So besides The Histories of Earth, and then your standalone book, you have one other series, correct? And that's your catalog. So your other series is City of Words, and it is a dystopian YA series. And I am excited to talk to you about that, but we are going to do that another time because Charlessa had computer issues and she got bonked out. And I know that she was super excited to talk to you about that series. She was telling me all about it this morning because I was reading The Histories of Earth and she was reading City of Words, and I'm going to read City of Words now and then we'll all have read it. You will have read it as well.
Yeah. I recommend the audiobook again for these ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But you know, if you don't, it's good as just read, old fashioned way. That's good too.
Right.
Yeah. It's good. We're doing another talk about it because it's a thick series, so it would be, it'd take another 45 minutes or so.
I'm going to hold up book one here, which is longer than book four from the Histories of Earth. Mm-hmm. But Charlissa said that she read 100 pages last night while she was lying next to her son, getting him down for sleep, and that she found it highly engrossing. So we are excited to talk about this YA series.
It's definitely a YA series. Like, there's parts mm-hmm. in it that are scary. If she's reading it before she goes to bed, she might, it might stick with her for a little bit. Yeah. Maybe read it like in the morning when you wake up, so you have time to decompress.
Yeah. My kids always make fun of me because there's some shows that I'll watch with them, but I'm like, this is a lights on show. And they're like, I want it to be like a studio or like a theater. And I was like, no, you don't trust me. You want the lights right. on when this is over. Uh-huh.
I don't want to give too much away, but there's literally a point in the second book of City of Words where all the lights go out. And uh-huh. so if you're reading it like in the dark, uh-huh. it'd be terrifying. So yeah. try to read with the lights on.
I appreciate those heads up.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you again for your time, and thank you for sharing this story, the Histories of Earth, with the world. And I know that that you weren't doing it for sales or anything, but I do really hope to see this story spread through more families, because mm-hmm. I really felt edified and encouraged by it. And I just think that it's beautiful stories to feed people's souls and add to common family vernacular that we can share with each other and reflect back on over the years. So thank you so much. And we look forward to talking with you again about City of Words.
Yeah.
And we will link to all of these in the show notes. And like I said, the Kindles are dirt cheap, but I really recommend the audiobooks if you have any summer car trips coming up this year. And remember, the stories are truer than true.